Good day, one and all. It's time for another OneLiner.com podcast. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, and in Glasgow, as always, Scott Morris.
Big up yourself.
And in Falkirk, as always, Drew Tavendale.
Up yourself.
just up yourself. on that note, let's begin. Speaking of being up yourself, or getting up yourself, Pixar's latest film, Up, brackets, Yourself, has been fawned over by the vast majority of the press since its US release, and now, after a short delay, it hits UK screens. It's the tale of a widowed old man who, threatened with a move to a retirement home, turns his knowledge as a balloon salesman to the task of floating his house to South America, where he and his late wife long to travel throughout their 70 years together. Along for the ride is an unsuspecting young scout who, before reaching altitude, was going door-to-door trying to bag his Helping the Elderly badge. All sorts of wacky adventures and life lessons no doubt ensue, all in a 3D rendered stylee. We weren't so sold on Pixar's last film, Wall-E, here at the One-Liner, so is Up a balloon filled with breaths of fresh air, or just a load of overinflated tosh? Ahaha, I'm making the joke. Scott, why don't you kick us off?
Up is, I think, Pixar's best film, which probably sounds... It's higher praise coming from other people than it is from me, because I've never been entirely sold on how brilliant Pixar are. I think they're good, but I hadn't seen anything that put them in the kind of same stratosphere as, say, Miyazaki's work or anything like that, which is more or less where I was coming on with the Wall-E stuff. I thought it was a decent film, but it sort of lost its way, and I didn't quite see why everyone was going apeshit over it. I can see why you would go apeshit over Up. It is very, very good. I mean, it's the first, well, after a perfunctory introduction of Carl, the widowed gentleman of which you speak, as a young kid, it goes into a sort of story of his and his wife's life as a kind of montage, if nothing else. But that is one of the single most affecting pieces of cinema I've seen this year.
Hmm.
And that means it just gives it a far greater emotional heft than any of these other films have, and certainly a lot more than Wall-E did. And I'll have to sort of restrain myself from just going ranting about Wall-E, because I want to focus on Up, because it's very good. It is alternately touching, and it's really, really funny. It is essentially all of the hyperbole that you could have applied to Pixar's previous releases, but for once I actually agree with it. I do think this is actually fantastic. You could argue, I suppose, that once you actually get into the meat of the thing and you have Carl actually launching his house with the balloons and landing on a previously uncharted mountain ridge area, it does, I suppose, turn into sort of standard-issue animated fare, and there's not too much special after that, apart from it simply being massively entertaining and massively funny. But certainly it's the closest I've seen to actual brilliance from Pixar ever. I can't really say a lot more about it than that. I don't understand why it's taken so long to reach this country, but it's well worth the wait.
High praise indeed from the Scot. Drew, would you echo that, or could you find any gripe with Up?
Oh, I certainly have no gripes at all, other than what Scott just said there about the wait. You said it was a short wait. It seems it's been 4 months, and it's not even like Pixar or a small company or part of a small company that might not have the facility to produce lots of prints. They're part of Disney, who I understand are quite large.
Yeah, they're big-ish,
So why I've had to wait 4 months when most major films nowadays get a worldwide release, I've no idea. So that aside, though, the film's excellent. I'm not quite sure I would say it was Pixar's best, simply because I've always had a soft spot for two Toy Story films, but it's probably up there with them. Yeah, it's just sweet and entertaining and funny, and it's all the hyperbole again. The montage that Scott referred to at the start is just beautiful. It's really affecting. I think probably if you felt a little tear come to the corner of your eye, you probably ought not to be embarrassed, because I would imagine a lot of people in any given audience are going to feel like that.
Given my tolerance for emotional moments in kids' films, if it brought a mild tear to your eye, I'd probably be bawling like a baby.
I didn't quite bring a tear, but it was close to it, and the cell is very affecting.
What I liked about it, I think, was the fact that it actually treats children with some sort of emotional maturity, which I suspect they actually do have, but it's never actually played to in any other Western kids'
Scott,
release.
Because it's not a real child. It's a computer-generated child.
What are you talking about?
Did you know that?
I was talking about, unless they're computer-generated children in the audience, in which case technology really has advanced quite a lot.
Yeah, because it certainly looked quite real to me.
my joke backfires.
Yeah, but it's the sort of thing that is always what made Hayao Miyazaki's stuff so much more affecting, because it did have some sort of level of emotional impact in there that wasn't solely aimed at adults, but it was also perfectly accessible to children. I'm sure they respond to it, and that's why this is a far better film than anything Pixar's done, in my opinion.
Yeah, and what's nice about it too is that there's very little speech in that section, or if possibly none, in the first 10-15 minutes, very little speech at all. And it's what did work about WALL-E is they managed to do a lot with a very little, no speech or anything, just action and portraying emotion by characters, movements, and nods the head and stuff. It's just really, really well crafted, you know. Fortunately with Up, it didn't go on and squander what it started off well like WALL-E did. Because as soon as it introduced humans and speaking, WALL-E went massively downhill. It just maintains this brilliance pretty much throughout. It has an awesome dog who talks, which amused me greatly, called Doug. And there's not really much more to tell than that. It's excellent. It's pretty much never lets up in being good. Never really feels like it's dragging at any point. It's funny throughout. It's entertaining.
It has some of the most interesting character design I've seen from Pixar in ages.
Yeah.
It's easily the most mature work I've seen from them. I think it's, if all think anything to characterise it as mature, but also incredibly funny, which I enjoy, because I like funny things. And who doesn't?
Can't say fairer than that.
Yeah, I would just like, but I can't do anything other than massively recommend seeing Up, because I might just go and see it myself again next week, but not in 3D, which brings me to the one last thing I wanted to say about it, though. This is probably... I may have mentioned this in the last podcast, the only film I've seen that I think really makes something useful out of the 3D, because the 3D really manages to sell the sort of the distance and height and scale. For instance, seeing this tiny wee balloon floating miles up, a balloon-filled house floating miles above the ground, and it sells that, and it looks good, so it adds something to the experience. But this is an important thing. It's A, not worth another 33% on top of your regular high admission fee for the film anyway, and B, it doesn't make it a lesser film. It might improve the experience a bit, but the film's not any the less if you didn't have that. So it's just, once again, even the best use I've seen of it so far, the 3D is still utterly pointless.
Yeah, I don't think I'm even sold on it actually helping in depth perception or anything like that, but I agree, it is just gimmicks tacked onto it. I'm not sure what's going to actually make me think that 3D is actually useful in a film. It's still just a tentpole gimmick, and I can't see what's going to change that.
Nothing will. Nope. It's that simple.
No, surely what will change your mind is the awesome and upcoming Disney's A Christmas Carol, with the same really creepy looking characters from the Polar Express, and they've changed the plot to an action film and put it in 3D. So clearly that'll change your mind, because that looks brilliant.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah, that will work.
That was Avatar
will change
your
mind, because Jim Cameron's got enough money just to hand everyone a big wad of cash and say, you enjoy this now. That's what'll happen. In a future world seemingly based on the premise that Second Life might one day finally convince mankind to give up on real life, Surrogate supposes that we will all remain indoors, living our lives vicariously through the use of robotic avatars that take our place out in the real world. Being trapped in one's own home seems a small price to pay for a utopian world free from crime and pain, but when the unthinkable happens and someone begins murdering these so-called surrogates, an FBI agent must risk his own life by leaving his house. For the first time in years. For some, this intriguing premise may be enough to tempt them into the cinema, but for Drew and Scott, the promise of Bruce Willis in a wig was all it took to put past.
And when is he not in the wig?
It's all it took to put arse to seat. Before we question whether or not this is a good film, just per se, is this the best Bruce Willis in a wig film?
Oh no, that's still got to be Bandits. Because he's in so many wigs in that.
It's a veritable menagerie of wiggery. Fair play. So on the question of surrogates, in and of itself, Drew, what is there to like or otherwise about it?
Unfortunately, not a great deal. I mean, in considerably more skilled hands than the screenwriters of Catwoman and the director of U-571 and Terminator 3, this may have been a considerably more interesting concept premise. You know, it might actually discuss individuality and make you think about whether people are giving up their identity by doing things more remotely, all those things. It might be interesting. It's just turned into a really dumb action film that doesn't actually even have all that much action in it. It also has managed to decide that once we get over the current economic recession, that everybody in the world will apparently have enough money to buy an Android copy of themselves. but it's never addressed in the film. It's not, it's like, we've invented this technology and it's not, okay. It clearly would be really quite expensive. Everybody's got one. Okay. That's a minor thing. It's just kind of rankles.
It's okay, it'll be subsidised. It'll be subsidised.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But not much of the film makes much sense at all. It doesn't really explore any of the things I suggested that might have made it interesting. It just turns down to a really silly investigation plot with the typical twist at the end that you can see coming for about an hour. Bruce Willis is kind of phones in his performance. It's really pretty low quality from him. We're not talking like Nick Cage and Ghost Rider bad or anything, but he's really, Willis's heart's not in it, and you know, it's Rosamund Pike or anybody else. And the problem too is that all the people, when they're made up to look like they're robots, just look kind of really unpleasant and creepy and unnatural, which is a part of the point, but given they're on screen so much, it's just not a pleasant thing to view. You don't really enjoy the film, you're just looking, those people look so creepy, take them away, please.
Is this saying anything new that other entries in the genre might not have said, Scott?
Well, it's the first live-action Uncanny Valley film, so I suppose that has some merits to it. But there's two...
See, CG will never get there on its own, so we'll have to meet it halfway.
It's not unsalvageable. I mean, there's kernels of interesting films in there, but it's more sort of theoretically interesting than actually interesting. I mean, there's the high-stakes whodunit running through it with all these remote puppets and all that, and there's the overarching thread of Bruce himself maybe being convinced that these human separatists who believe that all of this robotic surrogate nonsense is devaluing humanity and all that nonsense, and he sort of starts to sympathise with that, which may have some kind of... point and could have possibly built some dramatic tension, apart from the fact that the film does such a goddamn terrible job of explaining why actually being a human running about in the flesh is better than the surrogate solution which they have, which they do a very good job of explaining is a really, really good idea. So I can't actually emphasise in any point with what Bruce is going through. It doesn't really make a lot of sense and it doesn't really work as a film, and because of that you can't really buy into it. I think it's sort of relying on an assumed level of technophobia in the audience that, oh, that's obviously terrible. And to be honest, it does a fairly good fist of showing why it's not a terrible idea. Yeah. So it sort of works against itself very, very well, and leaves me a bit confused.
Especially too when it seems to be that you've either got a surrogate and then have all these mod cons and stuff, or you're living like some sort of 1950s hillbilly with appropriate vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're either living the ideal life or you're in Hooverville.
Yes. That's exactly. I mean, I'm not quite sure why they're saying this is better. You too can have to like shoot rabbit and you know, live outdoors with some stuff burning in an oil drum to keep warm, or you can have a surrogate.
Take the surrogate, please.
Yeah, that's really the main problem with the film, is it's just so difficult to actually work out what the themes are in here. I mean, obviously it's trying to look for, you know, dehumanizing itself through technology and all this, you know, email, no face-to-face contact, blah, 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 and that's what it's trying to tie into, but it just does such a goddamn terrible job of it that it's really hard to buy into it.
Surely the problem with that is that the general perception that people have right now is that life's a bit pointless and crap, really, and technology's quite good, so that's the reason why more and more people are flocking to things like Second Life and indulging in a bit of escapist fantasy, whatever. So surely trying to convince people otherwise is... That's not going to work.
No. It probably would have found a lot more traction sort of in 1980 than it does now.
Yes.
Now it just feels a bit archaic, and that in itself probably wouldn't ruin it if the rest of the film around it was sort of interesting or in any way captivating, but it's not really. I mean, I've seen a lot worse films this year, but there's really very little to recommend in here at all, unless you like a weird-looking Bruce Willis in a terrible wig. And who doesn't?
So go and see it.
Yes.
Catch it now while you still can. Another week, another zombie movie. Jesse Eisenberg, more from him again later, and Woody Harrelson are just about the only two people left in an America ravaged by zombie invasion.
Mm.
Having found their own unique survival style, the two are unlikely bedfellows. Eisenberg's Columbus, pretty much happy just to keep himself from being eaten, while Harrelson's gun-crazy Tallahassee is hell-bent on finding the world's last remaining cache of Twinkies before they go out of date. Along the way, they find companionship in the form of Wichita and Little Rock, two female survivors played by Emma Stone and Abigail Breslin respectively, but their contrasting attitudes and resultant infighting threaten the group's safety almost as much as the zombies do. Steeped in anarchic humour, Zombieland has proven a huge hit stateside, so is it likely to do the same here, Drew?
I would certainly hope so. I mean, given that Shaun of the Dead was quite popular here, and it's the same sort of not entirely serious take on the zombie genre and just having fun with it instead, it certainly ought to. There's not really a great deal more to say about this film other than it's very enjoyable. Woody Harrelson goes around shooting zombies in the head in various amusing fashions, and it's entertaining, it's funny, and they shoot some zombies in the head, and then they sort of run about a bit and shoot some zombies in the head. And really what I'm trying to say is largely they shoot some zombies in the head and it's funny.
Bravo. That's fine. That's...
really, that's, the film needs no more to be said about it than that. Because that's the film, but it's very entertaining and funny.
Scott, is there truly no more to be said than that?
Well, in stark contrast to Drew, what I enjoyed about this film was that there was zombies and Woody Harrelson shot them in the head. which I found to be most amusing. Yes, it's very good. If anything, maybe it's trying to be a bit too slick for its own good. There's a few too many sort of visual tics in it with overlay text that may perhaps become a little bit irritating over time. But I'll give that one a pass because the rest of it is fairly funny. It's certainly not the funniest film I've seen this year, but it's pretty damn good. I will probably talk more of Jesse Eisenberg's delivery later on, and it'd be more appropriate to talk about it during Adventureland, but he's very funny, and I do like his delivery of his lines in here. I think he's got great potential going forward. Woody Harrelson is basically doing a Woody Harrelson shtick, and it's pretty funny, and it's got zombie clowns and Bill Murray in it, and... I can't think of a better film than that off the top of my head. Well worth a look in, I think. It deserves its day in the sun. Will never be remembered as a classic, for instance. You probably won't even think about this more than sort of a week after you've seen it in the cinema, but it's certainly an enjoyable ride while it lasts.
So there you go. Zombie clowns and Bill Murray versus Bruce Willis in a wig. Zombie clowns win.
Hells yeah.
It's the summer of 1987, and college graduate James Brennan is dreaming of a European tour before further education takes him to university in New York City. Unfortunately for James, his parents are facing career crisis, and rather than soaking up the sights and sounds of the continental lifestyle, he's forced to take a crappy job at his local decrepit amusement park to help pay his way. Along the way, James will learn valuable life lessons, as well as discovering his first love in the shape of co-worker Emily Lewin. So far, so teen angst, but with a talented cast including Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart and superbad director Greg Mottola at the helm, Adventureland almost threatens to look appealing. Is it appealing, Scott?
It's most appealing. I hadn't really known what to expect from Adventureland because I don't think I'd known anything more about it than seeing one poster before I went into it. But it soon dawned on me that that there Jesse Eisenberg fella I've seen before in the counterpoint to Campbell Scott and the excellent Roger Dodger, which if you've not seen, try and track that one down. Maybe a little obscure, but a very good film. This raised my expectations somewhat, and it proved to be fairly accurate. What separates it from the herd is some fairly clever writing. It avoids the usual histrionics that this sort of thing could quite easily find itself dredged into, and for the most part it has decent to great performances from everyone, including a beardless Ryan Reynolds, which is just throwing this Reynolds beard quality correlation thing completely out of whack.
Twice that's happened this year, hasn't it?
That's freaky. Eisenberg's likeable and believable. He balances a kind of awkward charm with some genuine wit, and the same can be said for pretty much everyone in the cast, especially Bill Hader as the park boss with somewhat more obvious comic relief than the rest of it. Kirsten Stewart is Emily the Foil, who we last saw in Twilight, but let's not hold that against her. She's okay in here. It's touching, it's believable, it's amusing, it's enjoyable. It's probably a testament to how good a year, again, we've had, that a film that I like this much probably won't see in my top 10 list. Any other year it would have been an absolute shoo-in. Only complaint I've got against this one is the 80s setting. I know it's coming from the writer and director's prior experiences, which is where that's grounded in, but the 80s setting for me just felt like it was an excuse for a couple of cheap visual laughs at some crazy fashion stylings, and it could probably have been a little better if it had been updated to modern times. I think it would feel a bit less gimmicky. On the plus side, it does have a couple of actually decent tracks from the 80s, which is in the soundtrack, which is a bonus. But that's a minor gripe. But another than that, really enjoyed it.
And now, a brief interlude from Drew Tavendale on the theme of Adventureland.
Okay.
I hadn't forgotten.
I had. I don't have a great deal to add to what Scott said there. I would agree with him. I hadn't given it too much thought, actually, but what you said there, Scott, about it, the 80s being a gimmick, it is, I suppose, because there's not really anything in the film which is affected by the characters not having access to things now that they wouldn't have had then. It's not like, you know, affected by, you know, not having the internet or mobile phones or anything, so it's really irrelevant that it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a minor niggle, and the rest of it is really so good. It's really quite low-key, which is not what I've been expecting after having seen Superbad. But with caveats, it doesn't actually seem more... They seem more believable. The characters and their interactions seem a bit more natural. Like, you could almost believe these were real people as opposed to film people.
Yeah.
Which is quite pleasing. I mean, some of the notable caveats a couple of the characters seem willfully odd, notably the deeply entertaining, I will say, but depressive, nihilistic, world-weary 21-year-old who smokes a pipe. I mean, it's an absurd affectation, but since it's a pipe and he's a fine pipe-smoking man, it's going to find favour around here. It's just, he's a bit of a silly character, but he is entertaining. He's a likeable character, he's funny, it's just willfully odd. I don't really have anything more to add to Scott. Waste anybody's time. It's very, very good. People are likable, and I'm just really, really puzzled by the whole Ryan Reynolds thing now. I feel uncomfortable.
You're not wasting our time, Drew. Don't ever think that. I'm worried about you now, man.
Let's not turn this into an intervention.
So there you go. So I'm guessing then I haven't had a chance to see any of this this time round, guys. I'm guessing Up would be your choice for this week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, a tough choice, but definitely see Adventureland as well.
Else
we'll send the boys round.
Seems like a fairly entertaining crop.
Quite happy seeing any of the films I've seen except Surrogates.
Hmm.
In fact, just content yourself with downloading a Surrogates trailer so you can see Bruce Willis in silly wig. And that will serve you fine for that.
I perhaps should have mentioned this during the review, but it's another film. You mentioned you could see the twist coming a mile off. Well, of course you can. It's in the fucking trailer. Ugh.
Not that Scott's angry. There you go. That's it from us for this podcast. Next time we will be back, possibly a band in a box session, with any luck, at some point over the next couple of weeks, if that sounds agreeable to you two. So there you are. We'll be back at some juncture soon, with any luck. Remember, in the meantime, to email us any comments, concerns... recipes at the one what
abuse we yeah, just want emails abuse if you want we just want emails
yeah we I'd, just want emails
I'd prefer recipes rather than abuse so if you could
what about abusive recipes or recipes for abuse?
It's a good compromise.
That's either, complicated
either way. It's podcast@theoneliner.com. someone bloody use it sometime soon, please.
Not that we're begging and wanting to sound awfully, awfully desperate.
We know people are downloading this. Nobody, even if it's just to say hello, I downloaded it, that would be nice. Yeah, so anyway, keep it real. I've been Craig. Scott was Scott.
Hells yes.
And Drew was Drew.
Bye bye.
And he should never apologise for that. See you all soon. Bye.
'Imagine the horror and the disappointment.
Very much like looking forward to a nice hot bath and being eaten by a shark in the bath.
It would be bad, and also prompting lots of questions as to how the shark got into the bath.
Questions you would no longer be there to answer.
But it would remain a source of mystery to your surviving family for decades to come.
I don't know
the tragedy of bath sharks.